This lecture will attempt to contribute to the existing research that brings together psychoanalytic theories and Jewish thought. The presentation will focus on the circle of Rav Kook, which I think will give an important perspective that can make a modest contribution towards achieving the aim of this conference. My discussion will start from the question of militarism in Rav Kook's circle, as it developed from the writings of Rav Yitzchak Cohen Kook through his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cohen Kook, and to his disciples, and finally to the writings of Rav Tzvi Tal and his unique attitude toward that group. A third important thinker provided Rav Kook with the basis for formulating his own thought concerning militarism. We find the philosophy of ego, we hear perhaps the voice of Nietzsche, and we encounter the psychoanalytic views of Freud. As is well known, the usual Freudian perspective on war and militarism is based on a philosophical context, but is determined mainly by a psychoanalytical observation of children's development. As Freud said, war can reveal the most violent aspects of human psychology. It is important both to a person's identity as an individual and to a nation's identity as a group. For a group, militarism reveals the vitality of its essence. Rav Kook gave us a theological perspective on war. First, the development of messianic history is advanced by distractions and vehicles. This is in accord with the interpretation of ego regarding the phenomenology of spirit. Second, war causes nations to display their uniqueness and to be ready to struggle for their uniqueness. And the last and perhaps most important aspect of this view is that concerning those vital forces that are necessarily revealed by the necessity of going to war. Rav Kook understands those forces by using a Freudian explanation involving the sublimation of impulses. It is important to say that this discussion illuminates the meaning of religion in general. There is a cruel and traumatic element in the heart of religion. This direction could take us from the Freudian perspective on religion to the Rav Tzvi Yehuda's more extreme religious perspective. I will leave this meaning out of the discussion here because I have presented it elsewhere. As you will see, Rav Tzvi Tal continues Freudian attitude towards what I call a new Kantian interpretation of religion and Judaism. One remark, maybe two. We are not going to engage in exploration of Rav Kook's thought by itself, but only what is important to development of the theology of this group of thinkers. This presentation will emphasize Rav Tzvi Yehuda's writings, which sees in militarism profound religious value. Is a unique system of thought that presents itself as an extension of his father's writings. I will end, to be nice, with the word of the Nazir, Rabbi David Cohen, who asked us to write war on militarism. Because I see my presentation too complicated for me, so I leave the revealed part that I deal with the question of militarism Freudian thought, since and I will just point on, and I will focus on Rav Kook's circle. The basis for this theology of war in Rav Kook's circle is the same Rav Kook's attitude toward the First War. As we know, the First War plays a role in his messianic thinking. Nevertheless, the most important development of this theory was after Rav Kook's death and after the Second War, with all the traumatic understanding of the Shoah. I would like to propose that the big theological question of the Shoah leads to development of a radical theory with an element of determinism. This kind of thought continues to be heard from this circle. Most of Rav Tzvi Yehuda's followers becomes very radical concerning this question of mutualism. One of the most famous articles of Frank Cook concerning our topic, war, is an article called The War. Following the pattern of many of his writings, and a lot of people call it The Lies of War. First, we have to say that Frank Cook himself had never written an article with this title. This article, of many others, is collected from Frank Cook's notebooks prior to Yoda. Most of his paragraphs had been written in Switzerland during the First War, except from the first paragraph, the most radical and most famous, which is not part of these notebooks. So if we are looking well in this article, we can find the opposite. And I will read from quote 4. I will read in Hebrew because there is a translation to English. עזבנו את הפוליטיקה העולמית מאונס שיש בו רצון פנימי עד אשר תבוא עת מאושרה שיהיה אפשר לנהל ממלכה ללא רשעות וברבריות. זהו הזמן שאנו מקווים. אין הדבר כדאי ליעקב לעסוק בממלכה בעת שהיא צריכה להיות דמים מלאה. דמים מלאה כמובן. בעת שתובעת כישרון של רשעה. This is a clear saying, a bit Rosensteinian. Israel cut itself off from history, which is about bellicosity and war, and chose an alternative existence. The importance of wars is in revealing the uniqueness of each nation, and bringing to light the differences between nations. According to Ralph Cook, clarification of each nation's uniqueness is part of the messianic progress. Therefore, one can see in the events of war a messianic expectation. The revelation of Israel, the connection of Israel to what we've called the spring of the life, Mabu Achaya, makes the prophet's vision possible, where a new world is built to bring together all the nations of the universe. One can readily see the equivalence between their thinking and Rosenzweig's writings, composed in exactly the same period. But in the Book of Oroth, edited by Rav Tzvi Yehuda, we can find another paragraph, the first one that attributes a messianic significance to war. And you can find it in Fire. On the other side of the page. כשיש מלחמה גדולה בעולם, מתעורר כוח המשיח. את הזמיר הגיע, זמיר עריצים. הרשעים נכחדים מן העולם, והעולם מתבשם, וכל התור נשמע בארצנו. צריך בדעה גדולה, בגבורה עצמה, בעליון עמוק וחודר, בתשוקת אמת, ברעיון בהיר, צריכים לקבל את התוכן הניסה של אור השם המתגלה בפעולה נפלאה, בעלילות המלחמות הללו בייחוד, בעל מלחמות, זורע הצדקות, מצמיח ישועות, אור חדש של ציון תאיר ונזכה כולנו מהאורה לאורו. So in the days of Rav Tzvi Yehuda and disciples, there is a new light concerning war, or the theology of militarism. Intensive writing about militarism is initiated by Rav Tzvi Yehuda, who gave a concrete interpretation to his father's thought. Usually, he did not write about war per se, but rather under the rubric of messianism, redemption, or the Torah of Eretz Israel, his thought is influenced by the trauma of the Shoah and its meaning as a messianic war. Some of his writings and articles are very difficult to hear for me, especially when thinking about the context. And for example, I give it to you in 6. כל מלחמה היא שלב בגאולת ישראל. Every war is a stage in the redemption of the people of Israel. הגאולה מופיעה במדרגות, מלחמה אחרי מלחמה. כל המלחמות שעברו עלינו הן שלבים בגאולת ישראל. בין שהיו לפני קום המדינה ובין שהיו אחריהם, בין שהיו לפני כיבוש ירושלים ובין שהיא אחרי כיבוש ירושלים. מלחמת יום הכיפורים הייתה מדרגה. את מדרשה נוספת מיוחדת, אומנם נוראה ומזעזעת מאוד. ככל שדבר יותר גדול הוא יותר מסובך, יותר משובש, יותר קשה, צומח ממנו קידוש השם יותר גדול. We can trace two main directions in our view of thought on our topic. One we may call destruction towards building. The other, the disclosure of life's fortitude and power through war. This kind of writing is echoed in speech and in writing by most of his students, including the likes of Rav Shlomo Avinel, Rav Yaakov Filber, Rav Oded Volensky, Rav Zalman Melamed, and others. All of these figures, and perhaps other counterparts of those men, also preserve the messianic ideas. The deep meaning of destruction is the religious ideas concerning place and the state. The messianic expectation of Rav Kook is based on the idea that all the nation will recognize the significance of Israel's redemption and will give Israel the opportunity to have its own state, the kingship of God in this world. This expectation was not fulfilled, and the nation of Israel had to struggle for its independence and for its political state. The years that have passed and the wars that have been fought just depend the question about this messianic expectation more and more. Rav Kook's circle took on an extreme religious militant attitude. Skip a political event. One of the examples of this more militant attitude can be seen in Rav Oded Volansky's writings in the series of books Eben Israel that he published. The third part dedicated just one notion, war and militarism. He calls it Lelamed Bnei Yehuda Kashet. Volansky directs us to think about war in earthly terms. We are now being remade as a national identity, defined as we were in ancient times, arising and descending once again onto the stage of human history in the form of a free people striving to live in its land, in conditions of political independence and a proper, perfected life in the spiritual and social sense. The range of Volansky's terminology moves between messianic thought and the very concrete directions concerning war. It talks theological about the soldiers, their physical fitness, the relation between soldiers, the tactics of battles, etc. For Volansky, Reboiled Volansky, militarism is a special way of worshipping the divine. And I quote, if you want to, you can follow me in 7. עבודת השם זו, המיוחדת של המלחמתיות, היא הקשה שבקשות שמיכלות קודש מצוות השם, הנוראה המסוכנת והמפרכת שבכולם. עליונה היא מאוד בשורשה, בתכלית מגמתה. מובנית היא במהותה כתעצומה מפעלית, מוכללת כל, המיוחדת במהות התוכן והתכונה של חיוניותה, להיות נוקבת וחודרת אל תוך מעבי תחתיות מאפלי ארץ, ודווקא מתוך כך מורכבת ומסובכת היא מאוד, וממשותה שפעת חיוניותה ההופעית למעשה. So now you understand that the bellicosity is kind of worship the divine. And right, and now I want to go to the third part, for you it's the second part, yes? For a Rav Tau, the independence of Rav Tzvi Tau. One special, and if I may so say so, fascinating step in the development of this group is to be found in the thought of Rav Tzvi Tau. He's one of the most talented disciples of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. I believe that we have to see him as a unique and independent scholar. He's something conducted as an oral Torah, as one can perceive from his books, which preserve the oral character of his lessons. His published work takes the form of interpretation of Rav Kook's writings. He called his books Emunat Itenu, Face of Our Times, Chosen Yeshuot, Revealing of Salvation. Perhaps it is not just his biographer who should mention that Rav Tal is a Holocaust survivor. He was born in Vienna, but spent the war with his family hiding from the Nazis in the Netherlands. His engagement with the Holocaust is not just a theological and theoretical problem, like Bart's view that, but a very personal and traumatic issue. Reading these books reveals two periods of editing and thinking. The first part, in sections marked by asterisks, are a collection of lessons concerning a variety of topics. These are very similar to other rabbis from this circle. But from the third volume, his writings are dedicated to philosophical topics. Each volume devoted to one notion, war, the sacrifice, apparent sins, and other. As one can see, despite his interest in writing about Israel redemption, he dedicates all his lessons and writings to the crisis and the question of the difficulties of faith. In a profound sense, we may say that Rav Tal departs from Hegelian thinking in favor of Kantian philosophy. It is not connecting between being and consciousness. It is not the phenomenology of the spirit, but rather preference is given to consciousness alone. And perhaps as a successor of the religious Kant, believing the infinity soul, the divine guarantee to realize the divine vision, as he said a lot of time, "Habinyan tzarich liot baruch," the upbuilding must be the spirit. As I said earlier, in his first book, Rav Tal seems very much to belong to of the circle of Rav Kook. He relates to militarism in the same way as Rav Tzvi Yehuda did before him. Following a messianic interpretation, he sees war as revealing the reality of Israel. In an article under the title "Asher Asai Machem Leafli," he deals with the historical development of wars and describes it in very Hegelian terms. How human development advanced dialectically, bringing out a human culture and civilization that will sprout from the disruption of the old order. He said that because the world is part of the messianic development, so we can encourage people with the words of Psalmist, "Im tachane alai machane lo ira li libi, im takum alai michama bezot ani botech." Should war oppress me, still would I be confident, because this is the way of the progress. But beginning with the third volume of his collected writings, Rav Tal is revealed as an independent thinker, grounded in another environment, and using the tool of sublimation. Rav Tal dedicated the book "Ozer Israel Bigvura," who girds Israel with strength, to the question of war and militarism. God is revealing the world by words, notes and papers, but through the history. The path of that revelation is not simple and direct, is instead a very long and complicated process. The profound change that Israel is going to reveal is the radical resistance against war and against militarism at all. And you can find one paragraph in 8. "Milchamotenu einan kishar milchamot shebaolam. בעוד המלחמות השונות נובעות ממידות רעות, חולאים וקצבונות, אשר נצברו במעמקי נשמותיהם של העמים, הרי לא אלו הם מניעי המלחמה ומגמתה בישראל. מלחמה אחת ארוכה וקשה מנהלים אנו כנגד המלחמה עצמה, כנגד הטומאה והרשעות המשפילות את האנושות לאחוז בחרב ולשפוך דמים. מלחמות באות לתאר את העולם ולשחרר אותו מהכרח המלחמה. Therefore, Sir Rav Tal, the militant deed is not disclosure of vitality and not a product of internal will. Military action is a foreign force outside of the soul, as we call it, koach zar chutz lenefesh. The Jewish people have to remember all the time, says Rav Tal, even if they are struggling and grasping the tools of war and power, that war is not their tool. Something the Jews are to take on as a disgrace for a limited period, Israel can fight with a clear consciousness that this is not their tool. You know why? Because Jacob, as stolen, is a blessing. Because the tool of Esav are not Jacob's tool, but a necessary tool for temporary use. Israel has no natural militarism. Their militarism is never internal to them, but instead just a costume, a mere externality. One of the questions is the question of the Akedah that Danny mentioned also, and Rav Tao dedicated a book to that, and maybe I think it's very wonderful interpretation. It deals with that passage through a reading of Rav Kook's commentary. It is obvious that Rav Tao has before him more writings of Rav Kook on this subject than those that have been published and before us. These Indian writings concern the new meaning of Akedah in these days. In general, the Rav Kook commentary sees the story as a progressing through the three stages. The first one is the test of the divine command to Abraham. The second test is Abraham's ability to stop his religious passion to sacrifice his son. But the third, for Rav Tao, and the most important aspect of this story is the sublimation of shifting the religious feeling to a new mode of worship. As he explained very nice, God bless Abraham after the Akedah, Yan Asher Sita Et HaDavar Hazeh. So because you are dying this thing, Rav Tao asked, then what? Nothing had happened. So why does the Torah say that you did not obey when the son was not sacrificed in the hand? But here is the lesson. Real sacrifice is not what is important, but rather inwardness, what happened within oneself and through sublimation as internal worship. And there Abraham did sacrifice his son. If one thinks about the Freudian structure of culture, Rav Tao takes it one step further. It is not to limit your advice, but to refer on words. The ethical question is not how to limit, as the medieval thought, but how to direct violence and evil inclination to religious and moral pathways. As a result of this interpretation, one can see why God's blessing after the Akedah includes reference to war. As it's in the quote, וירש דרכה את שער אויביו, and your distance should inherit the gates of your enemy. According to Rav Tao, the deep meaning of the Akedah is to change human thought concerning the inclination to evil and even concerning militarism. By reading the Talmudic passage with Rav Kook's commentary, Rav Tao deals with the meaning of this word, Acher. The question arises in connection with the prohibition of against Tiltul, and the question is asked whether one can enter a synagogue carrying a weapon such as sword, which is tool of death. Rav Tao did say that even it's a just struggle, this world is an answer to humanity. Looking upon this world reminds humanity of its statute as aggressor, and of this world as the servant of the wickedness of the human heart. This word has positive meaning as a tool in the struggle against evil, but even so it is a reminder of humanity wretchedness. And as we say, for human reason, we will never arrive to the idea that this word might be an adornment, a fashion accessory, even if it were must justify its word. But there is another sword, explained Rav Tao, that is considered Tachshit Israel, a Jewish endowment. This world that is a result of a spiritual revolution that will lead the Jewish people to live according to the eternal noble ideas of God's world. When Israel eventually lives its life openly, knowingly and consciously in light of the divine idea, then all evil will be forced to surrender to it. This is the lesson, the most important lesson what we have to learn from this world. There has been nothing like this world throughout the history, and it is considered a Jewish endowment because it opens new gates of recognition in the world and leads to a change of conception and brings human knowledge to a new light. This world is not militarism at all, and not the way of revealing national vitality, but rather it teaches us that there is a strength of life that is not derived from the ugliness of life, the sense of a pure and honest life, life with integrity. And just to complete this paper, I want to, as I said before, to the Nazir words, and you can find it's very 60, from the 60s in the States, and I will read it in Hebrew. המלחמה היא פשע, רצח האדם בהמון, וכל בניין חיי העמים, כוחם ועצמם יסודם במלחמה. ערך הדור שאין בו מלחמות קטנות וגדולות, וכשנגמרה המלחמה, מיד מתחילות ההכנות למלחמה הבאה. כך היה וכך יהיה, וכך עובר מדור דור, האם גם כך יהיה? איך האדם ישקוט במוסר פרטי וכללי, בזמן שמוליכים אותו ואת העולם כולו לטבח? לאו, לא תעשה, לא תרצח. זאת צריכה להיות החלטתו המוחלטה, צו מוחלט. השלום, תנועת השלום צריכה להתגבר ולהתחזק, ועתידה להתגבר ולהתחזק בהתנגדות למלחמה, וללמוד המלחמה בפיזור הצבאות ובחיתות הנשק. לא בחיל ולא בכוח ולא בתוכמלות מלחמה, כי אם ברוח. As it's called peace, the movement for peace must become stronger and more forceful, and it will grow stronger and more forceful in opposition to war and the study of war. Not by might and by strength, not by the tricks of war, but by spirit. Thank you very much.
Okay, questions?
And because that
something that sounds like it, it's like of the bigger community, it's not ethnic. It's not something that see the peace as ethnic. He saw the peace as a harmony in the God existence. This is part of the philosophy of the Kabbalah. It's not the same idea when you see the rabbis in the same book of Jericho, is showing exactly the point of this. Jews in America saw themselves stand in front of an agriculture. And the question was how we can build a bridge or connection, some kind of connection between these two cultures. It's not this is not the story of love, there is only one culture. This is Judaism. And from this culture, you have to be in a pluralistic point of view to all the other cultures that only gain one color of the one culture of Judaism. This is the unification of the
thank you. I just want to comment on your comment. Two things. First is that was fascinating to me, that the article, very famous concerning war, has 10 paragraphs. 9 that are less famous is very is from Rav Kook's writings during the war, and very against the war, against militarism. On the first one, that I don't know where it's taken from, and I ask in Berlin everyone that deal with Rav Kook, say it's a nice problem, I will find it. I don't know exactly from where it is, but it's not written during the war, the First World War. And so it's interesting thing. What I'm trying to show and to present is the dogs feel the circle. That's right. I don't deal with the Rav Kook. And the problem of militarism in his writings, it's special again. I just want to present our Tzvi Yehuda, presents Rav Kook's ideas concerning militarism. And the second, I don't know exactly to explain, but there is a change in Rav Tau's writings between the beginning and now. In the beginning, all what they have written concerning militarism or war is very similar to Volansky, Shlomo Avimeir, etc. That wrote a lot about war, militarism, the halachic question of war, etc. Something happened before 10 years, maybe, and if I say 10 years, you say, well, no, I don't know when. And in his writings, you can find there is a change, a little change, and for me, it's very interesting thing, and it has a meaning concerning Rav Kook himself also, but it's a different.
I enjoyed your presentation very much, but I'd like to see if you could clarify one point. At the beginning of the presentation, you invoked Freud and Freudian ideas, but then Freud
disappeared
from the discussion. So
it was refreshed.
What I'm trying to understand here is, are any of the figures you're dealing with, are they in any way reading Freud, absorbing Freud, are they in dialogue with Freud, or why bring Freud into the picture now?
The answer is complicated. I'm sure that they dealt with Freud terms. Not very deep. They are not an interpreter of Freud or something like that. But they used these ideas. And you can say that just because they live in this world in the 20th century, so they have to do it. But it is more important because they used these ideas to develop their own idea. Like to develop the meaning of a vitality during the militarism, that one can find his vitality during that he has to go to war, and the meaning of aggression, and the meaning of to find your uniqueness, etc. So, but I'm sorry that I think that this presentation is too complicated, is complicated enough in these two parts, so a little bit, but you can see a little bit in the page. But you're right.
But is there any clear indication in any
way yes.
that they are at least working against the background of Freud's ideas, or maybe it's just totally independent and you're noticing similarities?
No, the answer is yes. I can also tell you, not surely, when Rolf Kook meets for the first time the ideas of Freud. It's in Switzerland, and you can say exactly when.
Thank you.
I have one question, which is, through listening to you, I was wondering whether you found anything that was uniquely Jewish about this approach. But could this approach be suggested by someone in Europe or Iraq or China or any place else?
That's really a good question. I don't know to answer. But I'll answer another thing. I'm almost sure that this is the first time during all the history of Jewish philosophy that you can find this kind of theology that give so importance to militarism and very clear and develop everything, and you can find a lot of writings concerning morality, the theology, etc. So if you ask me the Jewish as a Lutheran, I will say no. But as what they do, just the Jewish sources. And even do not like the sources, they are Jewish sources.
Let's get you.
Okay, I just want to make a comment on Avi Noam putting his finger right on the central point that in Israel, you have the culture is yours, while in America, the modern Orthodox approach was saying it's outside how you integrate it. Point out that a Kook follower in New York during those decades was someone not on our map, it's been Sion Buxer, who wound up on the conservative side and specifically used Rav Kook. I mean, he was part of the religion and democracy seminars at Columbia, being creating a We Are Americans. And saying that together, you know, on the panel with Tillich and everyone else, and saying that, quoting Rav Kook to say we are Americans, that if you were to take that position and extend it to America, aside from the halakhic breaks between conservative and Orthodox, you would also likely find yourself, even with him voting against driving on Shabbat, on the other side of the fence.
And Boxer was introduced to Rav Kook when Rav Kook gave the shiur at YU in 1924, little Barak Bachman
that's
there.
That's
Jacob Agus was also the American cousin of Rav Kook.
That's right. Is that those followers of Rav Kook from Reitz wound up on the conservatives?
Is that Agus is the one who did say that, right?
Yeah.
There's a, I think, thank you very much for addressing this. I think the great dormancy of the theology of war in the tradition is far from being handled. And this gets it going. I've been asking for it and I'm very appreciative. One thing that complicates the American Jewish experience and the Israeli Jewish experience is the First World War. There's a very interesting issue of German militarism and English militarism. Both of them, mid to late 19th century, hold redemptive ideals. Their moral purity is achieved through battle. And the ideology is not ready for modern military technology. And everything, the ideology of militarism collapses in the First World War, These are really complicated cultural movements.
But it collapses slowly. The entire,
and very slowly.
The entire European artistic avant-garde was a big part of it. It was very, very pro-war. Smart German expressionist painter, Buber. Very pro-war thinkers. And to me, this... From section number five... sounds so much to me like this German militaristic thinking among the avant-garde from this period. It's not Jewish per se as much as it's Jewish, but like the through certain type of modernism.
An odd parallel to Buber and Rakuk, the Chicken War. They both start off as this like romantic thing. They both sort of shift when they see how horrible it is, but in different ways. Buber has this thing with Landau, and he's like, I'm out of this business, and Zionism has to become spiritualized. And Rav Kook, like, only the Balfour Declaration, only Shivat Zion can redeem the terrible slaughter.
Okay, I've been asked to move things along towards supper, so we'll take John Sarna's hand's been up a while, so.
First of all, and I'll be no one's point. It's a really central point, but it's also the case that it looks at the two communities, modern Orthodox Jews in America, read Rabbi Soloveitchik, and modern in Israel, read Rav Kook. And the difference between the two communities has a great deal to do with their respective foci. But I wanted to go somewhere else, which I think you're hinting at, and that is really to ask you to put this in a much larger context. Rav Kook is writing, notwithstanding the militarism of World War I, it is also an enormous pacifist literature. By World War II, that literature has almost disappeared. After the battle against Nazism and the Cold War, there's no serious pacifism. It's removed to certain groups in America, not reemerges slightly in the Vietnam era. But what I'm asking is, isn't this a kind of Jewish reflection on really the course of pacifism in the 20th century? And we can see through looking generationally how it's really simply a reflection, although they would never admit it, of something much larger in the culture. That's the large question. I also wanted to observe, if you want to see militarism, look at Chabad, which nobody looks at. The whole theology from even the kids at Sivos Hashem. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was clearly influenced by the militarism of World War II, amidst the tanks, and one sees there as well in a place where one might not have expected to see this militarism. The same idea, which seems to me to reflect a post-World War II development that we can see reflected in Orthodoxy, but certainly wasn't created in Orthodoxy. So I wonder, what is...
I put aside the question of Chabad. It is a very important question, and I can say, from my perspective, that there is a difference when you talk about Tzivot Hashem, when you ask people to live a mitzvot, to observe commandments, when you take a sword or gun and go to the war, and this is that Hashem, this is the ritual of Levi. I can see difference between them. For them, it's kind of sublimation. And this is the relation. You are right that there is connection because there are both and messianic movements, so we can say. And agree, of course, that this is a Jewish reflection for a large question. I'm agree. But what? I focus on Bartz Yehuda because this is the most influenced interpretation in what you call a Jewish, I prefer to stay in Hebrew. Dati Lumi, not any word in English in that. And this is not the only possible interpretation to our books at all. I think Al-Nazir can show another interpretation to Rav Kook, but the question of Al-Nazir is very big and large, I would have said. So I'm agreed, and but this is our problem in Israel. So if Kiri will ask me if this class are modern orthodoxy, I've said that they are modern, they are orthodoxy, but they're not modern orthodoxy.
Okay, I think thank you very much, and continue on during dinner.
Dinner is now the same place we had lunch, and we meet again at 7:30.
As I say.
I don't know, what do you say in Israel? What do you say in Israel after a talk?